Hello, everyone out there in podcast world. I hope you're having a wonderful day. You're listening to or watching a Service Business Mastery podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Tersh Blissett.
And I'm sitting virtually next to the guy who's sneezing and coughing over here. Tersh has been out sick for the last couple of weeks. He's been kind of on his deathbed, so I haven't even really been able to talk to him. So this has been good to catch up this morning. But we are going to be talking with Patrick Lang this morning. We're going to get some updates on the state of the market. We may even talk about what it looks like for an internal transition for if you have maybe a team member or somebody that really shows interest in wanting to own the business and what that might look like. And maybe Patrick can give us some tips and stuff like that. And he's always got a ton of industry insights to share with us. And he's always a great guest on the show. So we appreciate him coming on.
Yeah. Anybody that doesn't know Patrick, you'll be glad to listen in on this episode. Patrick's a wealth of knowledge. He's been buying, selling HVAC companies, plumbing companies, electrical companies for several years now. And he's been on the podcast multiple times. And I am super excited to talk with Patrick. Every time we talk with Patrick, it's like talking to your buddy he is our buddy. So, and it's great to hang out with Patrick because he's always at these events that we go to, and just really down to earth guy. And whenever you talk to business brokers, sometimes I've talked to business brokers. I have a lot of business brokers that are friends. And so if you're one of those that might be listening to this episode, you're not one of the people I'm talking about, but it can be intimidating whenever you're talking to business brokers because they start talking numbers and you're like, I don't know what you're talking about. And you don't want to sound stupid because you've been running this business for 10, 15, 20 years and you don't have the information that they're asking for. Patrick's not that way. And so he makes things very understandable and digestible as a business owner. So I'm super excited to talk with Patrick and have him on the show today. Again, it's been way too long since he's been on. We've been trying to get him on and our schedules have
just been wild. We've had so much content stored up. Releasing, so we haven't really had to get anything new, and now we're coming up to event season again. So it's actually been really nice in one regard, but sometimes it means we're missing talking with.
The other thing is like the last time we had Patrick on, we were talking about one thing, and that has even changed. Like that part of the market has changed, and so it's going to be great to get some updates and everything, and hopefully I don't sniffle and sneeze and cough the whole time. So fingers crossed on that one.
It might be an improvement.
Right. Whatever.
before we get started with Patrick, do want to give a shout out to our sponsors who make this show possible and some of the events that we're coming up to. They make our travel possible. So we'll start with UpFrog. UpFrog is and actually I just saw Justin's latest ad. He's talking about UpFrog online pricing and what that means and how it's not it doesn't mean that you have to be low priced to show your pricing up front online. So it's
scary as a business owner to throw it out there. Hey, we're going to show our prices to our competitors.
Yeah. Cause I mean the old school way used to be like literally Brittany, when she was in sales, her team would literally, as soon as they sold a job, they would give the customer like $50 to get the estimates from the competitors. Cause that was the old way to do it. So no matter what, people get your pricing. It doesn't matter if he's putting it on a tablet. Like, they're going to get it. People are going to share it. Mm-hmm. So being upfront about it actually puts you in the driver's seat as far as transparency, at least in my opinion. And Justin's obviously done very well with him and his clients and stuff. So huge shout out to those guys.
Absolutely. Sarah, the team over at Sarah Billy, if you're not using a CRM or if you're using a CRM that you're not happy with, give the guys and gals over at Sarah a shout. We recently onboarded with Sarah. And there are things, I love something that Josh Roberts said, last night on the post, when someone was asking about Sarah, there are things that Sarah doesn't have, but it's the things that you don't really need. And, anytime you're working with a new CRM, I had to re-remember this, there are going to be things that you're used to doing a certain way that you just don't do anymore. But there are so many advantages to using Sarah, and
there was a lot of love on that post for their customer service. The fact that they actually have someone that will help them when they need help and understanding the software, plus the simplicity And I think somebody was sharing their gross margin numbers and like just how they jumped with Sarah's pricing and their job time efficiency, how it literally their margins just jumped because they actually understand their numbers now versus having to try to dig through a bunch of different reports or whatever that they were looking at. So if you guys are in the market, like usually off season's kind of the market time for that, give Sarah a look.
Yeah, absolutely. You want to give Copeland a shout?
Yeah. Copeland. So it used to be Emerson. It's now Copeland. It's two separate companies. Everyone that watches this probably knows what Copeland is as far as the compressor side. But what you don't know is that they have a lot of educational value. There's a lot of issues with compressors going back that are not necessarily, they're not faulty. And people try to get them under warranty, but they have a great program and a great system for your technicians to learn what an actual faulty compressor looks like. So that way you don't go back to your distributor or manufacturer and say, hey, this compressor's faulty, and then you don't get credit for it. So definitely reach out to those guys. Their contact information is always in the show notes.
Yep. And then last but definitely not least, Company Cam. Company Cam is a great digital asset management tool, and we use it at Service Emperor, and we actually have some automations built so that every time a job's created inside of Sarah, it automatically creates a project inside of Company Cam. And so then we can collect all those digital assets inside of Company Cam. While you also collect them inside Sarah, and we have to work backwards and put some of that stuff into Sarah as well from Company Cam. The great thing about Company Cam is it keeps a lot of their your metadata. So the location for where the photo is actually taken is saved on the photo. So whenever you actually upload that to your website, it shows Google that all the locations that you've been. So then when someone's searching for you near that location, then you're going to be ranked higher.
Well, yeah, and I can tell you from some things that we're testing and working on and rolling out to our clients with. So geotag photos don't have value on Google My Business or your Google Business Profile. Google strips that stuff. On your website, there's a lot of value in having that extra metadata, descriptions, keywords in the file for that. So if you guys are using something like a Company Cam or it's a lot easier when you have the data already coming over from Company Cam. Otherwise, you have to manually add that to every photo, and that is it's kind of a bitch.
That's tedious. Yeah,
it's tedious. It sucks. I've done it. So it's definitely worth giving a look. And honestly, they do a great job with keeping that communication as well on the job. So that way you don't have to, it's almost like an internal Slack feed on a job. So that way you don't have to go find like, where was that note again?
That's a good point too.
Enhances the internal communication for your team.
So did you say that there's no need in having that geotag information on your
GMB? Not on your Google Business Profiles, no.
I used to do that.
I used to do that too. Like back when I was at professional services, I did that all the time. And I'm like, this is like, you got to do this. You got to do this. And then I realized I listened to some really smart people and they did test after test after test. And I'm like, okay, yeah, it doesn't work. I got it.
Well, that's good.
But on your website, it does matter.
Cool. So I'm super excited to have
tip for the day.
Yeah, absolutely. Now just to actually do it. Well, actually not do it now. So.
Just hire us and we'll do it for you.
There you go. Even better. Let's get started with the show.
Are you looking for valuable business advice to reach that seven-figure revenue mark? Do you want actionable tips to properly navigate through every business challenge you encounter along the way? Let Tersh Blissett and Josh Crouch be your guide in getting you to the top here at Service Business Mastery. Tune in as they sit down with world-renowned authors in business, leadership, and personal growth who share valuable insights about management, marketing, pricing, human resources, and so much more. Let their nuggets of wisdom gold guide you in owning a thriving, profitable, and ever-growing business. Here are your hosts, Tersh and Josh.
Hey, Patrick.
Hey, Patrick.
Guys, thank you so much for having me on. It's great to be here again. As you were talking a minute ago, I was thinking the last time I was on, it was actually just Josh and I. We were at an event in Vegas or California or somewhere, and you interviewed me. Tersh didn't show up for that one, so it's great to be on with both.
What a bum.
So, Patrick, I think you were at Service World in Tampa. You flew out to Vegas.
That's what it was.
Profit Rocket, which is where I was, because we're now on two separate sides of the country, so it was like, well, we're going to divide and conquer. And that's also why we have so much content, is because we literally went to all these events and like recorded as much as we could. But that's what happened. You literally like flew in like a, I don't know, a red eye or whatever. Then we recorded.
That's exactly, yeah. That's exactly because I saw Tersh, and Tersh and I took a picture and that as I was leaving, heading to the airport. And then I flew out to Vegas and then you and I recorded the next day, I think. So it's great to be on. I appreciate everything you guys do. And I think I mentioned this to you before, Tersh. The very first podcast I was ever on when I switched to just selling heating and air was this podcast.
So I remember that.
I have to look back. It's probably been 6-5 years, something like that. It's been been a number of years.
2018, 2019, something like that. Does that sound
royalty
right?
Check for Tersh is in the mail, I bet.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yes, it is. I need to double check the address. Yeah.
Right. No,
does it keep getting returned to sender?
Yeah, that's it.
It does, but I keep sending it back. So
Nah, we really appreciate you hanging out with us. Tell us a little bit about you and your business for those who are listening and don't know who you are.
Yeah, absolutely. So brief kind of history. I too used to own a heating and air company. I've been a broker for a number of years. Several years ago, when I went to sell my heating and air company, I realized that there wasn't a lot of people helping people sell, specifically at the lower end of the market. Sure, if you're doing $30 million, $40 million, people will line up and give you all the advice you need. But if you're doing $1 million, $2 million, $3 million dollars a year, there wasn't anybody filling that void. That's where my business was. So I actually ended up selling my company to my son. My son owns it today. I'm in his office. So I'm around the industry all day, every day, looking at what everybody else gets to look at. And at that time, I guess it's been 6.5 years ago now or so that I switched my business to just selling heating and air, plumbing and electrical. So the bulk of what I do is heating and air, but we also do other trades. And in that time, I've sold 120 companies. So we've been fortunate that I sell an average of 20 companies a year. And the market has changed, right? So when we first started talking, Tersh, the bulk of what I sold was mom and pop selling to other mom and pops. You know, you were in one town and wanted to expand another, and you bought that. And that was the bulk of the deals I did. Then came the private equity interest, which has taken over the market, for lack of a better term. And so a lot of my buyers now are private equity buyers that, you know, buy 5 or 6 companies a year from me. And so, but I still have the mom and pops, and I still do, one of the things Josh mentioned on the intro, we still do a lot of internal takeovers, whether it's families wanting to take over, a son or a daughter wanting to take over the family business, or a long-term employee. You know, SBA financing has really helped with that over the last few years. As the market's changing and interest rates certainly are becoming higher, that's made that a little more challenging. But the SBA has made some rules about internal takeovers or partnership buyouts that's helped with that a little bit. And so we help on all sides.
Well, what kind of rules are they doing to make that happen?
Yeah, what's different about that than maybe seeing someone from the outside?
Yeah, so in the partnership buyouts, it's amount of money down. They've made it where you're not having to have as much money down, and they're allowing the seller to remain on in some capacity where before they wouldn't allow that to happen. So historically with SBA, if I sold you my business, within 12 months, I had to be gone. I couldn't be there anymore. And that was the rule. And now they're allowing that to be a slower kind of transition. Now there's certain deals and things that have to be met in order for that to happen, so it's not as crystal clear. But they're allowing that to happen, and also allowing the seller to provide part of the down payment. So there was rules about where the money had to come from and what they had to do, and now they're allowing the seller to still have some skin in the game from a down payment standpoint. Because the reality is oftentimes, well, so when you go to buy a company, typically they want 10 or 20% down, and historically that had to come out of your pocket. Nobody else could have it. Well, now they're saying that the seller can carry a note so they can finance part of that down payment for you. So you can have less, because if you think about it, when we look at many companies, a lead technician wants to buy the business. Well, oftentimes they haven't been saving up money for 20 years.
Right.
They've been working, paying bills, just raising their family.
Doing just their like commissions. Absolutely. Or spits or something like that. Yeah.
Right. And so when it comes time, when you approach them and say, hey, would you like to do it? They say, yeah, I'd love to, but I don't have $3 million laying around. Well, before they potentially could have had to have $600,000 out of pocket, which they probably didn't have. Now they're allowing them to have less money to put in, and they're allowing you as the seller to come up with some of that money for them.
Interesting. Huh. When did that change?
It's been 2 months, roughly. Potentially.
Oh, okay. So 2 months really ago. Recent.
This is like brand new.
Really recent. Yeah, and obviously... And I think I've been on this podcast, I believe, with Brandon Boland, or Brandon's been on here from Live Bank. And so he and I are actually talking tomorrow and recording. We're recording a video just to put out on our information talking about those changes. So I'll make sure I'll send you guys a copy of it. And you'll
can I give a little shout out, Patrick? Patrick does a really good job with his YouTube videos. Like, if you guys really want to start learning about this stuff, because as anyone that has entertained selling knows, like, it's a process. It's not going to, like, if you're not going to wake up one day and be like, yeah, I want to sell today. Like, it's going to be a 12, 15, 18, 24 month process. But Patrick has a really good YouTube channel. Yeah. Hopefully, if everything goes well. So, but he has a lot of videos that show you the things that, like, buyers are interested. Here's how to prepare. Here's how to do this, that, and the other thing. So, if you guys, since I didn't, you mentioned you were recording a video, definitely check out his YouTube channel, which we'll put in the notes as well. Just start learning this stuff. Like, it's always better to know it and not need it than to need it and not know it. And I think education, especially on something like as complicated as a sale of a business asset, is definitely something
that people... I appreciate that, Josh. And I do that because most people don't know where to go. They don't know who to ask, you know? And for most of my clients, most of my sellers, it's the biggest sale of their life and they've never sold a company before. So, and they don't know who to ask. And oftentimes they're asking the person who's making them an offer. You know, with all the private equity interest, there's professional buyers. I'm sure many of the people listening or watching the show are getting phone calls and emails and letters that, hey, we want to buy your company, or we have somebody who wants to buy your company. That's not the person you want to go ask, how much is it worth? You know, it's asking the barber, do you need a haircut kind of thing? Well, of course you need a haircut. And so I do that because I've been in those shoes. When I first sold my very first business, it was the scariest thing I'd ever done. And once again, for most people, it's the biggest check they'll ever cash. And they don't know where to go. So I do the YouTube videos. They're pretty casual. Me at my farm, oftentimes just recording. Somebody will ask me a question. I'll think, wow, that's a great question. Let me do a video of that. So if anybody does look at it, it makes me feel better that occasionally people do watch. If anybody,
you get some views on those, so don't be happy.
And if you have an idea or want to know a question, shoot it to me. I'm happy to record it, because if you've got the question, so does somebody else. And so that's my thing, is I want people to come to me now. And you had just mentioned it. You know, it's a 12 month, 18 month, 2 year potentially process. Come to me now and ask the questions. The worst part of my job, the saddest day for me, is when I meet with somebody and say, hey, your business doesn't have any value. You know, somebody spends their entire life building something and they never thought along the way to ask what a buyer's looking for. And then they call me and they've been to every conference and they hear everybody getting these crazy multiples and everybody's buying companies and they get all these letters in the mail. Everybody wants to buy their business. And I look at it and say, I'm sorry, nobody's going to pay you anything for this. Right. And so that's a horrible thing to have to do to somebody, but it's real. And so I'm trying to prevent that from happening and give as much information out as I can so that there's no excuse for that. So 5 years from now, when somebody's ready to sell, they can say they've gathered all the information. They know what buyers are looking for. They know what's important. It's why I do podcasts like this. It's why I do the videos. It's why we write articles. I try to get as much information out there because I've been there and didn't know who to ask. And most people don't either. And the reality is many business owners don't say, hey, what do you think my business is worth? You know, they don't ask their friends that. And so they don't know where to go. And so I try to do that to be a resource.
Yeah, a lot of times it's an ego thing too. Like you don't want it to be worth less than what it is. So you just don't ask.
Yeah.
Well, and you hear about all these great multiples. You hear about these $30 million and $40 million companies that are being sold. And you don't want to go to somebody and say, I'm only doing 2 million. When the reality is doing 2 million, Tersh, obviously, you know, Josh, in the industry, you know, doing 2 million is work. You know, I mean, it's something to be proud of that you've got to that level or a million, you know, getting over that threshold is a big deal. And so So I think you're right. I think ego gets into that, but also I think some people are scared, maybe don't want to know the truth. You know, I think that can be a part as well.
Well, when I was at professional services, we acquired a company. It was in the same small town, 12 to 15,000 people. And the guy had his business open for 28 years and he didn't want to do it anymore. He wanted to golf. That's what he wanted to do. And like he had no memberships. His sales have been declining. He had like one employee. He had one really nice box truck that we ended up buying. So we literally bought more like the actual physical assets than anything. And then we paid him on like what we sold for the first, I think, 2 years afterwards. Like it was like kind of a decline number. Like if the first job we came out to was a certain percentage and was less, but it wasn't worth much, even though he had a good following. Like he had a good customer list. It just, he never nurtured it. It was all on paper. There wasn't anything digital, like email addresses that he could actually use and leverage. And I still see some businesses out there when I talk to them, like, we had a painter come over and you could kind of see like some of the stuff that they did behind me. They're like, yeah, we're on paper. And I'm like, how do you follow up with estimates? We kind of got to dig through them and do this. I'm like, just get it in a CRM, man. Like, just do it. Like, you got to do these things.
I see that every day. Type of stuff.
It's crazy.
I see it every day, Josh. I see every day no CRM. They use Excel spreadsheets for their accounting. They're not on QuickBooks or anything similar to that. They do no marketing. Because, you know, what if the phone rings more or somebody's got to go do it? We can't handle the work we've got. So I see that all the time. And the unfortunate part, I also see people who wait too long. You know, the reality is you start getting older and start slowing down a little bit and it's not as much fun and you don't have as much passion. And they come to me and they're doing $1 million in sales. Mm-hmm. And they say, but 3 years ago, I was doing $4 million in sales. Mm-hmm. Well, nobody's going to pay you on what you were doing 3 years ago. They're paying you on what you're doing now. And I'm seeing that even now, parts of the country had a very mild winter, had a very slow start to summer. And so numbers are down. And I think there's more built into that. You know, I think economically, there's probably some issues that we'll see play out there as well. But many people, you know, you look at the COVID years, I mean, companies were ramping up and tripping over, you know, installations, and now they're having to work for it. And so keep that in mind. If the goal is to sell in the next 12 to 18 months, make sure you understand what's happening in the marketplace, because don't wait and then say, well, I used to do this and I want to sell it based on what I used to do, because it's not going to happen.
What do you do for a company that does see things that they're declining? Like say they were at 2 million last year and they look like they're going to finish out this year at 1.5.
So it depends on who the seller is and where they are. You know, I have some clients who are up in years that they're out of gas. You know, they're 75 years old. You guys both know what the talent pool's like. You know, I mean, everybody's trying to steal everybody else's talent, and finding technicians is hard. And so they're losing that battle because they're not doing the things that some of the other companies are doing. And so for them, it may make sense to sell now and stop the bleeding, because they may not have the energy or the desire to bring it back. Now, if it's somebody who's a little younger and says, hey, it's not a fire sale, we're just had a bad 6 months. Well, hey, you know, buckle down. Let's put some things in force. Let's make sure you're optimizing your marketing. Let's make sure you're optimizing your customers. You know, let's make sure you're doing all those things. Now, I don't do that aspect of it. I'm not a coach. I'm not a consultant. There's a lot of smarter people out there who are doing those things. But, you know, talking to them about, do you have it, the gas in the tank to be able to build it back? Because that's something, if there's a reason that causes the business to slow down and you fix that reason and then it comes back up, a buyer loves that story. Hey, we ran into an issue, whether it was supply chain or COVID or staffing or whatever it may be, but we fixed it. Here's what we've done and here's how we're doing it. Another thing we saw a lot of, obviously you guys know, pricing increases. You know, we went from a January, normally an 8% increase every year, to a 8% increase, to a 15% increase, to a 30% increase. And everybody didn't keep up with those price increases. You know, they were just going to work, taking care of all the phones ringing. And so they may have, their margins could have went down a lot. So now they need to fix those kind of things. So
how often are you seeing that the, people's top line revenue numbers are going up, but their profits are going down because they didn't keep up with that, because inflation. So naturally, you know, you should be growing 15%, because if you just kept your prices, you know, in line, you're going to naturally grow 15% because of inflation. Right. Are you seeing that very often, where people are growing their top line number, but their bottom line number is shrinking?
Yes, a lot. And part of it is, too, many people are great at keeping up with equipment price increases, but they didn't keep up with
the repairs. Yeah.
And the gas, and the guys, and the insurance, and the everything else.
Yeah, all that stuff has gone up. Like, even now, I mean, gas is almost up to $5 a gallon and again here. It's just like, it was never that high when I was in the trade before COVID and all that stuff. It's just gone up tremendously.
You need to come back, come to Georgia.
What's it in Georgia?
I don't know, like 75 cents.
Well, in that case, I'm moving.
I need to go to Georgia too.
You got a few acres I can build on.
Yeah, you can come pitch a tent.
Yeah, we can come shoot some hogs.
Yeah. So that's it. Not only that, but the during COVID and right after COVID, I found that keeping good employees, you had to spend money. And I feel like it's gone down now, but that's a feeling. That's not me like doing studies or anything. But there was a period of time there where you couldn't hire anybody at all. And so I was paying double what I was paying 2 years prior to that for labor. And so then you really have to manage your numbers if your labor is getting that kind of crazy. And now I feel like when I've seen hiring ads lately, the prices have, the dollar amount's gone down compared to what it was a year ago, 2 years ago.
Well, and look at what a van cost you. You couldn't even find a van anyplace.
Oh,
and if you
yeah,
did,
ridiculous.
It was ridiculous. And so, I mean, all those things compound. And the reality is a buyer, and this is nothing against buyers, but a buyer's job is to get the best deal they can. So if they're looking at your business, anything that they can do to justify a lower price is in their best interest, whether it's private equity group or a competitor down the street, the cheaper they can buy it, the better it is. So anything you can do to protect yourself from opening up that can of worms of why numbers are going down is going to be in your best interest.
So how about taking money back out of the business whenever you go to sell, like say SUV, you know, that's not really an expense for the business. Like that's called, it has a terminology. What's it called? Like, buy down.
Called an ad back.
Ad back. That's it.
Yeah. Ad back. Back. So it typically is. And so creative accounting is another way to look at it.
Yeah. How much on your, I feel like it would be more, I think it, in my mind, a smaller company would see a lot more ad back percentage wise than a larger company. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yes and no. So I see all types. I think many people come to me and show me their books. And when we do evaluation, we want to see gross and net income. We want to look at tax returns, P&Ls. And then I go back to them and say, hey, it shows you're making 100,000. They're like, wink, wink. We really make 300,000. Well, right. We'll put yourself in a buyer's shoes. So if I come to you and say, Tersh, fantastic business, want you to buy it. They're making $300,000. They're asking a 4x multiples. They're asking $1.2 million for the business. I give you the tax returns and it showed they made $100,000. You're going to look at me like I've got
or it shows that they lost money.
Absolutely.
Because they didn't want to pay taxes.
And if you walk into the bank with that tax return and say, hey, I need to buy this business for $1.2 million, that shows on paper it's making $100,000 and it's a 10-year payback, assuming you worked in the business full time, they're going to laugh you out of the bank. So although building a business to sell and building a business to save taxes on are two different businesses. And right. So if your ultimate goal is to sell the business, my belief is you should pay taxes. If you plan on running the business for the next 20 years and you want to do what you can to minimize taxes, that's between you and your accountant, and I'm okay with that. But you can't then come to me and say, I've spent all this time doing everything I can to minimize my income, but I want somebody to pay me for it. The joke in the industry is you can't get paid to steal twice. You can't cheat the federal government and then expect somebody to write you a check for it. Right. And then once again, putting yourself in a buyer's shoes. And I've had a buyer say this, if they're willing to cheat the federal government and risk going to jail, how in the world am I going to trust them that they're telling me the truth about their numbers, that their wink, wink, $100,000 cash they get is really cash? I can't put them in jail. Well, I can't do anything with them. So if you're building to sell, my belief is to pay taxes. And the reality is just put the numbers in there. Let's say you're in the top tax bracket and you reclassify $100,000 net profit. Well, you're saving $37,000 in taxes. If you were selling your business and you were able to get a 3 or 4 time multiple, you'd be getting $400,000. So you're saving $37,000 to give up.
Stepping over dollars, they don't pennies at that point.
But absolutely. I guess you have to assume that you're going to sell within the next couple, you know, a year or so in order to not like pay a bunch of taxes over the next 10 years and thinking you're going to sell every year and then you don't ever sell over that 10 year period. I don't know.
You know, it's funny. People put it, they'll put so much effort into something that will get them a small outcome that's short term, instead of putting in that same amount of effort for something that will make them, well, what is that, like 400,000 versus 37,000, was it 10 times the amount, 10 times the money, if they actually put the effort where it was worthwhile. And then if they took the effort to try to save the money on taxes into growing their business further, who knows, maybe that's a 15 or 20 times the amount of money. But I feel like sometimes people just get stuck on these little things like, well, I just don't want to pay the government because they got some grudge against some politician or whatever is going on. It's just focus on things that grow your business. If you focus on the right things and you just stop worrying about all the little penny pinching stuff and grow, just focus on growing. And a lot of that stuff takes care of itself at the end of the day when you do talk to someone like Patrick to have that conversation about, hey, it's time to sell.
So let me ask this, because I know a lot of people, well, go ahead, Patrick, go ahead, because I'm going to change the topic.
I was just going to say, I've been self-employed my entire life, so I understand about trying to minimize taxes. And so I'm not blaming anybody for doing that. I'm saying if the ultimate goal is to sell for the highest amount of money, you want to pay taxes. And because if I go into a buyer and I can hand them a tax return and say, here's all the money it makes, we're able to ask a stronger purchase price, because they're not having to go back through a spreadsheet to see if they paid for their ex-girlfriend's condo in Florida, you know, kind of add that stuff. You know what I mean? It makes it more convoluted. If I can hand them a tax return and say, there's everything you need, we pay taxes on it all, and there's the money, and we want X amount multiple as a result of that, we're able to get a higher premium. Sorry, Kirsch, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, well, you bring a good point. Have you had success in the past, though, with people who have had large add backs?
Yeah, it comes down to a couple things. One, how provable is it? You know, so if you're paying for your wife's Porsche payment out of the business, it's clear that she's not picking up units in her Porsche. Right. So it's easy to add something like that back. Yeah. So in that scenario, it is. But if you are in the rental business and you buy yourself heating and air units to change out in your rental properties,
that's
hard. Your Home Depot bill is challenging to say it's not in the business. Your gas bill, those kind of things that it's hard. Once again, always put yourself in a buyer's shoes. And if I came to you and said, here's what he makes and here's his Publix receipts, you know, it's going to bring up more questions about everything else. But is it doable? Yeah. It is, but it's better when you don't.
Gotcha. So whenever you're selling your business, a lot of times you're selling it to get out of the business. So you don't necessarily want to stay there and be the GM necessarily. What size businesses do you see most often where they're like, we don't need you to be there to be the GM. We don't need your dispatchers. We don't need your CSRs. So then that's kind of an advantage. to sell to a company like that versus selling to someone who's maybe a CPA and they don't know how to run an HVAC company, and they need you to stay there on board, and they need the CSR, and they need all the other people.
So it's kind of a two-part question, really. The people part, I've never had a buyer come in and say, I want to get rid of the people. They're gotcha. Buying okay. the people. That's the reality, is the people are the ones who run the business, and they're hard enough to get. And I think a lot of people are buying businesses purely for the people. Most companies, now this year's been different, but if we took the last couple of years, their phone rang more than they could get to. You know, it wasn't a fact of getting enough business. It's who's going to run the call and answer the phone and do those kind of things. So I've never had a buyer say, we're going to walk in and clean house. Everybody wants everybody. That's the first part. Second part of that is about your, and the second part's kind of a two-part one too, is your involvement in the business. If you're the best technician, best salesman, and you're the accountant there as well, it's going to be hard to replace you. So that's right. going to make your business hard to sell at the first stage. Is no buyer calls me and says, hey, I want to buy a business where I can work in the field 15 hours a day and then come home and do paperwork 5 hours a night. It just doesn't happen. Nobody wants to work that hard. So your involvement hurts the business from a sales standpoint. But in some scenarios, and size is typically part of it, you know, you start getting above $1.5 million in sales, then typically there's people in places. I find most sellers get stuck at $1 million because they won't get out of their own way. They won't get out of their own truck. They won't be the only salesman or comfort advisor, or whatever they call them. So that once they kind of get above that threshold, it seems that there's different people in the field doing it. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. I also, like, if you have a PE firm who is buying up multiple companies in the area, I feel like they would be okay with buying you as a smaller company, knowing that you wouldn't be there anymore, because they're just going to wrap you into another company anyways.
Correct. Absolutely. And that's what's happening a lot in the marketplace. Historically, when private equity groups first started calling me, they wanted $10 million in sales and at least $1 million in EBITDA. Well, they bought all them up, and now they've been moving down market, and now they're in a market. So if they already own something in Savannah and there's another small company in Savannah they can tuck right underneath, then it makes sense. They just rewrap the vehicles and boom, now they're running, and they don't need you there. They've got a GM in place and they don't need two GMs. So absolutely correct.
So what is that? So obviously, you know, at least I feel like we, especially with interest rate changes and stuff like that, we hit the height of probably what heating and air companies, plumbing companies are going to get from a multiple perspective. Where has that transitioned over the last like 6 to 12
months? Is it going down?
At least what I'm using.
So I haven't seen any downturn yet, but the reality is it has to happen. You know, if you look at, use an SBA loan as an example, the average SBA loan right now is 10.5% interest. Well, getting a business to cash flow with a 10.5% interest note around your neck is going to be challenging. You know, that's a lot of money depending on how much you're putting down. And so it's made people have to become more creative to make up that difference. We're starting to see some pricing pressure. Good companies priced properly, in my opinion, are still selling. I've sold more this year than I did last year at the same point in time. So knock on wood, business has been good. I think the benefit of the trades, I think the trades will stay relatively good, from an acquisition standpoint, just like the industry will. I think the industry will have its ups and downs, but overall will continue to do well. But we're starting to see some pricing pressure, more expensive money, and specifically a slowdown in companies' growth is going to have an impact. Those two things are going to have an impact on valuations. And once you start seeing buyers slow down, just like in real estate or anything else, less people going after the same listing is going to have an impact on price.
Tell me this, because we all seen it where companies were popping up and within 2 years were doing $5 million. Are those companies as valuable as a company that's been in business for say 10 years and they're doing $5
million? No. No, because it's a marketing machine. So when you look at that company, you look at that company that even 5 years or less, you know, that their entire business model is based on marketing. And when you look at the marketing spend of those companies versus a company who's been in business 20 years, drastically different. And so they're having to buy that next customer to fill that next need instead of servicing. And oftentimes those high growth companies didn't do anything with maintenance agreements. If they did, they gave them away. There wasn't much of a value there. So no, there's not as much value, because the minute you shut that marketing funnel off, the business stops, because it's a sales machine, not a service business.
Yeah. How often are you seeing businesses that, because I know of a couple of them that they do a lot of revenue every year, but they only have like one service tech. And so they do a lot of sales.
They essentially just do a lot of replacements. They're
lots
really good
of replacements. And yeah. their one service guy is a warranty technician or something like that. Do those hold value, or is it going to be something similar to what you said about the marketing spend?
I think it'll be similar, because buyers are buying relationships. They're buying those relationships with repeat customers. And here's the reality: if everybody on your customer list has a new unit, and they have to call you in 6 months, that call's not going well. I mean, we're not calling to tell Tersh we love him. We're calling to tell him our coil is leaking, and what are you going to do to fix it? And we just paid you $12,000 or $15,000, or I hear these stories of $25,000 to change out my 3-ton system 3 months ago, and now I'm mad at you. So a buyer knows that. So you're buying, oftentimes in that scenario, somebody's headaches, not buying somebody's customer.
How valuable are maintenance agreements? And how do you evaluate a maintenance agreement?
So the answer is, vague answer is vary, and I don't know of any way that a buyer specifically comes in and says, I'll pay you X amount of dollar per maintenance agreement. I know in the past that was done. I'd read some stuff, SGI had talked about it, some other organizations, about this maintenance agreement is worth this much. Here's what my experience has been. A company who focuses on maintenance agreements historically has a higher net margin, has better employee retention, and better customer retention. So in that environment, automatically your net numbers are up. If you're not having to go replace employees and spend that money all the time, that's money that's not going out. The other part is their marketing spend is typically non-existent or down substantially. And if they've been on a maintenance program for a number of years, that those maintenance customers often make up 80 to 90% of their revenue. So not in the maintenance agreement himself, but being the customer home twice a year, identifying other opportunities, upselling opportunities, referral opportunities. So all of those things. So it's not a maintenance agreement is worth $1,000, but I can tell you somebody who has 1,000 or 2,000 or 3,000 maintenance agreement, that business sells more than the guy who's got 50.
Well, you think about it you talk about net, like your marketing spends down. So there's a couple percentage points you don't have to spend on marketing for new customers. If a PE company, someone wants to buy and wants to expand into a different trade, all of a sudden you got 3,000 people, 2,000 people, whatever it is. Hey, by the way, we offer plumbing now. Take advantage of a free whole home plumbing inspection or electrical, or whatever, pest control. You can add whatever service you want. And the companies those PE companies that really see the growth there, they want to bolt on these other services because they see the value in that customer list. And that's what I've seen, at least with a few companies in a PE company that we're talking to, is they want to, all these companies that they have, they want to add electrical because they have the electrical license. They want to add these different things in these different states, but they find companies that have good membership base, a good recurring revenue base. So that way they can just easily go and you can easily schedule a bunch of electrical inspections and get $500,000 worth of work, snap of a finger, and grow the business immediately. And then you start optimizing for new customers and stuff like that.
Well, and at that level too, they're not buying a customer list. They're buying a relationship, right? That's a customer who knows, likes, and trusts you and pays for their own loyalty. They're paying you, $199 to be in their home twice a year. So that's a relationship. That's not somebody who saw an ad, bought a change out, and then now is technically your customer. That's a customer list. But somebody who's been your customer and paid you for the last 15 years for you to come to their home twice a year and calls you every time something breaks, that is.
How closely are you looking at how much those maintenance calls are being charged? Like, are you looking closely to see if people gave away a maintenance every time they did a change out, or are you looking to see, like, okay, are they spending $375 a year on maintenance?
There's definitely a difference. So if you have 5,000 maintenances because you did 5,000 installs and gave everybody one, there's not much value to that. But right. If you have customers who are on a monthly maintenance or customers who are on an annual maintenance and have been, so smart buyers are going to ask, one, how long have they been on there? What's the attrition rate? How much has been paid versus given? And so buyers are asking those questions because there is an absolute difference.
So those are numbers that we need to know as a seller as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, what I would say, it's funny, I had a conversation with a plumber. He was looking at Any Hours site, and he's like, I want my memberships to look like this. Well, Any Hours got like multiple different departments, right? And they're just plumbing. And I said, do you really need that complexity, or do you just need to sell a lot more of these? Like, what is your focus been? Because he admitted he hasn't focused on actually pushing and training his team to sell them every single job. And so from an accountability standpoint, his team's like, well, it's not really that important. He doesn't talk about it. He doesn't train us on it, that sort of thing. And he's like, you know, you got to create this grand plan where it's got this membership and it's got the VIP and then it's got the ultra VIP and then it's like the, you know, whatever. Just Billy has been a huge proponent of this, and I think he's got the simplest membership program I've ever seen. And they just sell them. I think in 3 years, they have like 5,000 memberships.
Yeah.
In 3 years, you can do it. Like, I know he's in a bigger market, so you may not be able to get that number if you're in a smaller market, but you can get 500. Mm-hmm. Like, you can get something. Don't make it complicated. I think people overcomplicate. Oh, I got to have this. And, oh, I got to have this next tier and then this next tier. And then all of a sudden it's like really complicated to sell it. One price, sell it. Just go and just start getting people on your list.
And the big thing I see, right? The big thing, sorry to talk over there, Josh. The big thing I see with older sellers, guys who've been in business for years, one, they don't see the value in a maintenance agreement. So people are calling and asking if they can go on a maintenance program. They're telling, well, no, we can't. Just call us whenever you want it serviced. Because they don't understand the value. And in their eyes, why am I going to send my technician to a call that's only going to make us $100 gross or whatever it ends up being, when they could be running a demand call for $500? But there's so much more that goes into the maintenance agreement. And in my opinion, from employee retention to shoulder season, to customer relationship, to your van in somebody's driveway. And there's so much more that goes into it. But often the guys who've been in the business a long time, they don't make any money, or I don't have enough guys to do it.
Run them.
So we stop doing it. And so the opportunity is there. I can just tell you, I look at companies all day, every day. And companies who focus on maintenance agreements and doing a good job for their customer sell for a higher figure. And that's the bottom line. Companies with more maintenance agreements sell for more than companies with less, not because of the revenue generated by the maintenance agreement itself, because of everything else that comes with it.
Well, and that's, there was a, literally just in the last week, Gettle has partnered with Smart AC. And I know Landon Brewer is a huge proponent of this model. And honestly, I feel like he's had probably some push from behind the scenes to get something like this going because of the recurring revenue model that people are trying, like Billy's talked about it, Landon's talked about it, where they're really trying to bring this to the industry. So to make the multiples even better for us, because that's why SaaS companies do so well. That's why it's like everyone's got a SaaS company, right? Because SaaS, everyone's starting their own software thing because it's easy to do. And they make good money. That's why, because of the recurring, either the monthly recurring or the annual recurring. And if we can do that in the home service industry, the sky literally is the limit. Like we might not even be getting, like we talked about, kind of capping off, but if you can prove a model where you not only own the customer, so they don't go to Google, they don't go to Facebook, you literally get alerts and have this system, you own that customer. Like they're not going anywhere else. And all of a sudden now your revenue is, your potential for bigger sales is even better.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Deeper share of wallet at the end of the day, you know what I mean? I mean, if you're in that customer's home more often than anybody else, and with smart AC and other systems that are out there similar, I see people doing it very well, and they can call the customer and say, hey, there's something going on with your air conditioner before they know there's something going on with your air conditioner. That's to me Chick-fil-A service. You know what yeah. I mean? I mean, Chick-fil-A is always the standard on delivering a quality service. Well, that to me, I see that in Florida a lot on like rental houses or vacation houses. So somebody in Georgia has a house by me and it's got a system that monitors it. We call them, say, hey, before you get there on Friday, we need to get in because something's wrong. The pressures are off and we need to come fix it. They love me. Absolutely yeah. love me. They hate me if they get there at 6 o'clock on Friday night and their air conditioner's not working. We don't have a technician who gets on there.
Exactly.
It's one step further. And people are often willing to pay for that. And whether it's a maintenance yeah. agreement or whether it's constant monitoring or whatever the case may be, I think there's value in that. The buyer sees that. If you can tell a buyer that they're paying us X amount a month to take a look at their system and to keep an eye on their system, there's value.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Yeah, I do see, especially with some of the really smart minds that are pushing that and going that route, I do see the ones that's going to be the next jump probably in the home service space, whether it's smart AC or it's something else. Obviously there's been some other iterations in the past, but I definitely think there's a big push for that sort of model in our space. And the great thing about the trades is it's different than, it doesn't usually follow the regular market. That's why I think so much money has been dumped in here, because obviously we saw what happened with COVID. People got travel industry, some of these others completely shut down and we thrived. So we mm-hmm. did the opposite of what everyone else did. So there's always going to be value in the trades and owning a company here, especially for those people with bigger portfolios. But it's just a matter of, you know, being smart and building the company the right way. There will always be value in building it the right way.
Absolutely. I think onto that, and I preach something all the time when buyers who are looking at the space call me. I live in Florida. I don't know a husband dumb enough in the state of Florida to tell his wife he's not going to fix the air conditioner. You know, I mean, I don't see that happening. And my yeah. wife is from Minnesota. I don't know anybody that's going to tell their husband or wife, hey, in the wintertime, we're not fixing our heat. You know what I mean? I mean, there's certain things that are going to be done. And the beauty of the trades is somebody has to do it. And I think that is going to continue to create an opportunity long-term. And obviously I bet my business on it. You know, I was selling everything and I only sell the trades because I believe in them that much. And I think there's a great opportunity long-term, but you've got to build the business right. And knowing what a buyer is going to pay for is important.
And what's the name of your business and how people get in touch with you, Patrick?
Yep. Business Modification Group. They can go to my website, as Josh mentioned at the beginning of today. I've got a YouTube channel. I'm active on LinkedIn and Facebook. I'm in every Facebook group that has to do with heating and air, and I try to answer questions and do what I can. Or they can call me directly. My phone number is on anything. My cell number is 352-440-4604. They can call me, text me, email me.
Braver than I am.
I put a post today on social media. I sold a company yesterday in Memphis, Tennessee.
I saw
a seller contact
probably a year and a half ago.
Yeah, something like that. He called me a year and a half, 2 years ago and said, here's my business. What should I do to make it worth more money? And I said, do these things. Here's what we need to focus on. He called me back like 2.5 months ago and said, hey, Patrick, do you remember me? And I'm like, oh, of course I do. And, you know, we went through right. things and he said, I'm ready to sell. He was able to sell his business for night and day difference in dollar figures by focusing on those four things over the last 12 to 18 months. And so I love stories like that because he called me and said, what should I do? I said, do this. And he did. He went and figured out the how. I told him the why behind it. And he cashed a very big check yesterday and was thrilled to death at the conference and kept telling me on every call, I'm so glad I reached out to you 18 months ago. I'm so glad you told me this. And to me, it was simple stuff that I do all day, every day, but most people don't know, I guess. So call me, ask me. I do valuations. I probably do 10 valuations a week that are people who are 3 or 4 years from wanting to sell and say, hey, what's it worth now? So I know what I need to focus on to get it worth more. Don't hesitate, cool. Whether it's me, and there's other brokers who are in the industry that are great people as well, and they'll do the same thing for you.
Yeah, but we trust you.
We do. Plus, you give tourist tickets to the Florida Georgia game. He's free.
Yeah, that too.
Absolutely. So, go Gators. I'm glad you brought that up. I need everybody rooting for the Gators this year. We're the devout underdogs at this point. We've got Tennessee this week.
Everybody's an underdog compared to Georgia.
Yeah, right. It's going to be a rough year for my Gators, but I'm standing proud. I'll be there cheering them on. So, yeah, that's another thing. You need to get a hold of us, and we can invite you to we do an event with JB Warranties. Will Basco with JB Warranties, who's a great guy and a friend of mine, is a devout Gator fan, and we've had some trash talking over the years. And I'm a Florida alumni, and my daughter graduated from Florida, and my youngest son is at Florida. So Florida has all my money. And so we do an event every year in Jacksonville at the world's largest outdoor cocktail party. And so we'd love to have people join us. So certainly get a hold of me. We'd happy this year may be challenging, but we can get you on the list for next year. So I'm glad you brought that up. We'd love to have more people there. Come celebrate with us and support my Gators.
Go Dogs.
I'll let you guys fight over that. I'll watch. I'll drink the cocktail and watch.
All right, Patrick, we appreciate you hanging out with us. If anybody has any questions at all, don't hesitate to reach out to Patrick. Reach out to me or Josh. We'll get you connected with Patrick. But again, thank you for watching and hanging out with us for this episode of the Service Business Mastery Podcast. This podcast is focused on service business owners, managers, and technicians who are considering becoming business owners themselves. I hope you found value in today's episode. If you did, please don't hesitate to leave us a review. 5-star preferably. But with that being said, I hope you have a wonderful and safe week until we talk again next time. We'll see you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Service Business Mastery. Now that you are equipped with essential business advice from this impactful conversation, you are one step closer to becoming the successful owner of your dreams. If this episode has been helpful to your business journey, don't forget to subscribe to the show, leave a rating, and share it with other owners as well. Visit servicebusinessmastery.com to learn more.